Well, good evening, everyone. Pam Stack, your host. I'm so glad you're here with me tonight, and you're listening to Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. It is a very stormy night here in Southwest Florida, thunder and lightning. I hope I don't lose you, but even if I do, you will be able to hear the podcast of this show. Tonight, I have a very exciting, very, very, very special guest. I am always searching for new voices and voices that are different from mine, but people that make sense, you know, because usually I don't that much. So, and I came across this wonderful, wonderful woman whose name is Fozia Burke, who is a social media expert for authors. Now, you know, I talk to a lot of you, and we talk about being of two brains and how it's hard to be a writer and put that creative side of your brain to work. And then you have to take off the writer's cap and put on your marketing hat. Fozia is going to show you how to do – she's going to talk to you about how to do this. She is a digital book marketing pioneer and friend of overwhelmed authors everywhere. She is going to talk to you about step-by-step process of identifying your brand, of defining your audience, clarifying your goals, and setting priorities. She offers advice on successful websites, building mailing lists, which how many times have you heard me say that is the most important tool in your writer's toolbox. Without further ado, let me bring the expert on, Fozia Burke. Fozia, I'm so glad you're with me, finally. Welcome to Authors on the Air.
Thank you, Pam. What an honor to be here, and thank you for having me. I am so excited about this conversation, and I just feel like we totally get each other, and, you know, I think we'll have a great conversation.
We do. So I would like to start off this conversation first by reminding everyone that if you made your list of questions like I suggested, you can take down this phone number to call in because the expert is here to answer your questions. The number is 347-633-9609, 347-633-9609. Whether you're an aspiring author, whether you're making your debut, whether you are well-established, whether you're independently published or with a publishing house, everyone needs to know how to put on their best social media face. Fozia, tell us how you got started doing this.
Well, it was a while back, so I'm going to date myself a little bit. But, you know, I used
That's
to work
okay.
at Henry Holt, and before that I worked at John Wiley's. I come out of book publishing. And, you know, one day I saw the internet for the first time, and I just started thinking. I was a publicist and a marketer. And I started thinking, how can I use this new tool to promote my books? And, you know, at that time nobody was really doing online publicity. There was no such thing. People didn't have email. So
right.
I sort of decided that I had to figure this out, and I quit my wonderful job and my wonderful my boss and decided I would take a leap of faith and start my company called FSP Associates and do this crazy thing that nobody knew what I was talking about, internet marketing and publicity. And, you know, that was 1996, I guess, yeah. And so that's kind of how far back it went, and I was just really lucky because when I resigned, my boss hired me as a consultant. So before I even left the building, I had my first client, and that's kind of how I got started. And there was a lot of experimentation, a lot of failure, lots of back and forth trying to figure out what to do. But, you know, for those of us who've been around since the early days of the internet, we remember this, like, incredible collaboration, you know, everybody talking to each other, everybody saying, this worked for me, what worked for you, what do you think about this?
Right.
There was a real sort of sense of community, and I think, obviously, we've lost so much of that. It was very positive then. It was so positive. Everybody was really excited to share ideas and resources. So I really just kind of tried to figure out how to do this work, and that's how we became the first internet marketing company for books and authors. And we also launched the first author website ever, which was for Sue Grafton in, I think, 1997. Right. So that's sort of how I got started. And it's just been a, you know, pleasure and a journey. And you know, just lots of learning all along the way, because there was really no roadmap for me to figure it out. So I had to just do it on my own.
Well, and it continues to change. That's the interesting part of it. You don't ever have everything down. You haven't ever learned it all, and you can say, okay, here's the definitive answer. Because as social media changes and values change and sites come and go, you've got to keep up with them, along with algorithms, which are the bane of my existence. Now, in full disclosure, I would like everyone to know that a lot of the authors that we welcome to one of the 15 shows in the network come from Fawzia's company. We love getting requests for interviews from her company. And
Thank you. Information's
always solid. It's very good. We never have to worry about, you know, getting review copies or making sure the author shows up. I mean, in the early days, it used to be publicists would forget there was internet radio. Now that they're... You know, talk about something new, too. You know, doing internet radio was, it took years for people to understand what, and even now people say, oh, are you on satellite network radio
mm-hmm.
or something? No,
right.
It's internet. You can listen
right.
on your
right.
telephone. Sirius, right?
Yes.
So I want to say that I know Fawzia's company very well. Her staff is remarkable, and
that's why
I'm really glad to bring her on. When a new author comes to you, a new client, and they are a debut novelist, they come to you and say, I've got my book written, I'm right now in the editing stages, and I'm going to have a cover done. Do you jump in right then and there and say, wait, we should have started a long time ago, and we should have had a website for you and putting your name out there? What's the first thing you say? Because I know that marketing and promotion, internet communication is not the first thing on a writer's mind, especially when they're
mm-hmm.
a debut.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do when you have that debut novelist come to you?
Well, I think, I mean, if they're coming to me for services, then there's a couple of different things. One is that, you know, we do publicity campaigns for novels, but we start about 2 months before the book is going to be published. So if you're talking about mm-hmm. someone who is, you know, still in the editing phase, then what I do with them is actually do a little bit of consulting. So while they're polishing their novel, we start doing branding work. And the reason it's consulting rather than actually doing it for them is because I believe that it's only successful when the authors do it themselves. That's just my perception.
Oh, absolutely.
I feel that, you know, it's not sustainable to hire someone for the rest of your life. I mean, this is work that we're going to always have to do. So I really just walk them through the process, help them set priorities, figure out a timeline, figure out a launch strategy, a launch team. You know, these kinds of things that authors do need to do, no matter who they published, who publishes them. They really need to do this part of the work themselves. And so we start working on that part, and then when the book is finalized and, you know, we have a pub date, then we set the publicity campaign, and the publicity campaign sort of starts about 2 months before the publication date. And at that point, we start sending the books out to people like yourself who might be interested. Mm-hmm. But one of, you know, a few different things that we do in our campaigns, first of all, our focus is always online only. You know, that's how I started my company. I always thought once I figure this part out, I can just rope in the traditional media. But honestly, I never figured it out completely. I'm always learning. I'm always trying new things. And,
sure.
and I just felt like you can only do so many things well. So I just decided that I would rather do this one thing well than try to do everything and not do it as well. So then we work on the publicity campaign, you know, reaching out to bloggers and websites for reviews and interviews and guest blogging opportunities, helping authors figuring out how to promote themselves on social media without annoying people. So that's sort of like the timeline. You know, if it's early on, then it's more sort of consulting and helping authors do their own, setting up their own brand that they can successfully maintain. And then if it's closer to the publication day, we do the publicity.
One of the things that you wrote a book that is it's a very easy to understand simple strategy book called Online Marketing for Busy Authors, a step-by-step guide. It is actually truly that. The book is not that big. I think it's about not even 150 pages. But one of the very first things you talk about is personal branding. So branding 101. And when I talk about branding, and this is the thing I try to explain, and maybe you can expound on it more, but in today's vernacular, you say, I'm going shopping, I have to pick up some Kleenex, I have to pick up, I got to get some Xerox paper, I've got to get da-da-da-da-da. You may not be shopping for Kleenex. You might be shopping for facial tissue. You may not be shopping for Xerox paper, but you're looking for photocopy paper, except mm-hmm. that brand is kind of identifies what the product is. It mm-hmm. is a, kind of a blanket name now, mm-hmm. you know. So talk about branding, because I think that's incredibly important for authors. And I do try very hard to make that point across with our authors. All the hosts of the network except for me are authors. They're best-selling mm-hmm. authors. Some of them are award-winning authors. So I always say, figure out what your brand is. And so how do you define someone's brand?
Well, I think, first of all, I wish I didn't have to use the word brand, because a lot of authors don't want to see themselves as brands. You know, they don't want to be Xerox. They don't want to be Kraft cheese. They don't want – they think it's very – it's a commercial thing that, like, other people do. You know, it's not something they want to be associated
right.
with. So I tell people that, you know, an author's brand is really their stories and their expertise. That's it. So once I say that, authors sort of take a deep breath, because they think, okay, I don't have to be Coca-Cola. You know, I'm not, that's not who
right.
it is. It really is a way that you connect with your readers. And what happens is, you know, we live in a very competitive world. There's a lot of information out there, lots of books, lots of podcasts, lots of other things. So what happens
sure.
is when we develop a brand, we're really developing a loyalty with our readers. And there are definite advantages for developing that loyalty. One is that we don't want people to just want a book. We want them to want our book, right? There's a lot of books on
correct.
Online marketing. I want people to say, I want Fawzia's book, right? So I have to work really
right.
hard to earn that trust. And when I earn that trust and people look me up and they say, you know, they read a blog of mine or they see a social media post or something, they say, okay, you know, I get it. I get that she knows what she's talking about. I do want this book. So it's really a way to convince people to sort of gain their loyalty from your expertise, but also your stories, your writing style, that kind of thing. So I think once we tell authors that's what their online brand is, I think people, the authors start to feel a lot more comfortable with that idea rather than, you know, your big corporation or something like that.
Right.
And then as far
also,
as, you know,
doesn't it connect you to a lot of your reader base, too? If you have a particular affinity for sailing, let's say, and you talk a lot about sailing, or you post about it, or boats, or you have, you know, an Instagram account, and you show all these sailing places that you've been to or where you've gone, isn't that another way to connect to a potential reader?
It absolutely is. I mean, I think you have to show it, right? We keep talking about, in fact, it's my least favorite word these days, authentic, because it's just been overused mm-hmm. and, you know, co-opted
yes.
and all that kind of stuff. But really, you have to connect with people on a personal level, because you can only be in that promotional headspace for so long. And people can only take so much of your promotional space. So, you know, we're all sort of ignoring ads, right? We DVR programs and we skip over the ads.
Sure.
We're watching Netflix where there is no ads. And if we're doing that on TV and it's changing the dynamics on television, why would we then try to copy that in our social media feeds? You know, people don't want ads. They've been as clear as possible about that. So we have to figure out how to connect with our readers without being, you know, total infomercial. And that doesn't mean you never mention your book, because obviously this is why we do this. It, you know, there's no harm in saying that. But you also don't want to be a 24/7 infomercial, because that would turn people off. So if you're interested in boating, you should talk about that. If you have kids that are driving you crazy, as our kids all do, talk about that. You know, connect with people. So
sure.
These are all human traits. They're human experiences. And when we connect with people on that level, then I think that people feel like they know us, and that's what we really want.
You also talk about something in the fate, what you call phase one, called
mm-hmm.
Know Thy Reader. Tell
mm-hmm.
me what, can you explain that a little bit in detail, please?
I would love to, because it's such an important step, and I think a lot of people sort of, you know, don't take that step, and that's why it's phase one.
Right.
It's because, you know, before someone says, oh, my publisher told me to be on Facebook, or, you know, my agent said I should be blogging, or my best friend's neighbor said yeah, I should do this, before you do any of that, you have to figure out who your readership is. Because if you know your reader, and, you know, sometimes people know their readers really well, and sometimes they don't, but a lot of authors, when they come to me and they say, my reader is everyone, I literally have to say, I don't know how to promote that. You know, I don't know how to promote to everyone. There is no everyone.com. You really have
right.
to focus as slimly, I don't think that's a word, but...
narrow it down as
know,
best
narrowly,
you can.
Narrowly.
To,
you have to really
the
be
the demographic that's truly yours. Correct.
That's exactly right. Right. I mean, people asked me when I was writing my book, they said, well, this could apply to anybody. This advice is, you know, your advice is pretty spot on for, you know, small businesses or restaurant owners or any of those people. And I said, that may be true, but my brand is really known in the book publishing industry, and I'm known with authors. So even though my book has the title becomes very narrow, it has deep roots just because I have an authority in that arena. So I could just be an online marketing book just like a billion others, or I could really focus my attention and say I wrote it for authors because that's my experience, which makes the audience obviously much smaller. That's kind of how I know my readers.
How do they identify who their reader is?
Well, I have a form in my book, and actually for free on my website, FauziaBurke.com, there's a worksheet, and it actually helps you work that out because it's not that easy. You know, it's not as straightforward. But the funny thing is, you know, when I talk to authors and I start asking them some of these questions, they kind of know the answer. You know, when I ask them, is your reader at all geographically located? They're like, well, you know, I do have, my characters are based in Maine, so a lot of times people in Maine really like my books, or people on the West Coast really like my books.
Right.
And so when you start
right.
asking them, it starts to become a little bit more clear. So I have these worksheets that just allow people to answer the questions as best they can. And honestly, by the end of it, they go, wow, I know more about my reader than I expected. You know, what's the issue?
And I wanted to say, there's only like 10 questions, and they are such common sense questions that if you are interacting socially with the people who are your readers, and you're asking them questions, not telling them stuff, they're going to answer your questions for you anyway,
mm-hmm.
because there is a nice way to ask those questions in social media, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely.
You
but also, I think, you know, most people will say, okay, well, you know, more males gravitate towards your book, or will women gravitate towards your book? So you can
right.
pick that, you know, people sort of kind of know. You know, they say, you know, most of the time, sometimes I'll even ask them, if you had a reading at a local library, who's in the audience? And you'd be amazed how much detail people kind of know about the people that there are their readers. They just never put it down, and they never really thought about it. And the reason that's so important, which is why you asked about it, is because your whole social media marketing strategy really depends on who your readers are. So, for example, if your readers are, 40-something women who really like, home design or fashion or something like that, you know, choosing Pinterest would be a great idea for you. That's exactly the demographic
sure.
for that particular network. But,
sure.
you know, if you are writing a book about crime fiction and it's geared for more men than women, then Pinterest is not your area. Why would you spend even a minute there? It's just not going to be...
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's why knowing your readers is so important.
When we were discussing before the show started, when an author asked me what social media should I use? And I say, oh, for God's sakes, only the, you know, only the ones you're going to actually enjoy using. Don't
yes.
sign up for every social media there is, because you will lose your mind. It's just
yeah.
way,
yeah.
way, way, way too much. So, yes, I agree with you 100%. I have to tell you again, Fozia's book asks some very simple questions and gives you a tip of why she's asking that question so that you know why she's asking. And the questions, you have these answers, authors, you do. I want to remind you, if you have questions right now, you can call in at 347-633-9609. One of the things that I feel is very important is you do a little visualization exercise, and that is to get real with your goals.
Mm-hmm.
And most authors, I get the impression, and maybe you can talk more to this, do not treat book writing and book sales as a small business.
Mm-hmm.
So... If you did, then you would create a business plan for your life as an author, a retail author. You are a commercial author. You want to sell books. This is how you want to make your living. And so in writing a business plan, you need to know what your goals are, even if they're motivational goals for you, for yourself personally, but also goals for your business as a commercial author. How do you help authors determine that? Fozia.
Again, there's another worksheet in my book about that exact section, as you know, because I do want people to really get you know, in the first phase of the book is really about just getting organized, because
yes.
if you know your goals, then you know how to pursue them. But if you never know your goals, so almost every author I talk to wants to be a big best-selling author, right? Have you ever met anybody who said, you know, I don't really care about that? Everybody, even if they say they don't, they care. You know, everybody wants to sell a lot of books. So I tell them that's a given. That's, you know, and honestly, that's really more a wish than a goal. Because the problem with, you know, wanting to be a best-selling author is that there isn't a clear path to that success rate. Some people do it in one way, some people do it another way. So what happens is you get caught up in something, but you can't really get there. So it's important
yes.
for you to come up with goals that you can achieve. You know, I want more
yes.
people
yes.
to sign up to my newsletter. Okay, that's a goal. That can be done. That can be achieved. But just having this general, I want to be a best-selling author, just doesn't give you
it's
enough
vague.
Information to have
sure,
a marketing plan. Exactly. Yeah,
right.
So the goals really help you define your marketing.
So I want to mention some things in the phase one of this book. The first thing, and this is chapter 5 says best advice in the business. So here's number one, know your readers. We talked about that. The second
mm-hmm.
thing is develop a long-term relationship with your readers. We talked about that, by engaging with them in a real way. The third is be real. The fourth one is something that I hear often and it's not done, and that is trust your publisher.
Well, the publisher said that. So.
Well, you know, and here's the thing. There are a lot of publishers out there. I mean, let's face it. We have the Big Five. And then
yep.
now we have a resurgence of some really terrific small press companies who do
yes.
an awesome job, who are really
yes.
excellent, but
yes.
unfortunately don't have the staff that maybe a traditional house has. So
yes.
an author is always second-guessing what the publisher is saying.
Right.
What?
Right.
How do we say to an author, you've got to trust your publisher because your publisher is your publisher since they know the demographics, they know who to target to get the books out to and things like that. What do we
yeah,
say?
I think I'm so glad you brought that up because a lot of people, you know, sort of skim over that chapter. I really talk to agents and publishers that I work with, that I've known, my friends, and really got their advice. So it wasn't just me saying something. It was, you know, different perspectives. So, you know, I have advice from the agents of very big best-selling authors. And this particular one that you're talking about is Kate Lloyd, who's the,
yes.
I don't know exactly her title. I think Associate Director of Publicity for Scribner at Simon & Schuster.
Simon & Schuster. Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
And
yes.
So I think her advice is really important, because what she was trying to say is that, you know, authors sometimes almost have an antagonistic relationship with their publisher. You know, it's almost like they become confrontational and all that kind of stuff. The important thing to remember is that, you know, they want to sell your book because that's how they make money. So their decisions are based on that choice, for sure. They want to do it, and then they have an expertise. So, you know, if you fight them on a cover or you fight them on everything because you don't trust their decisions, then you shouldn't have gone to them. You know, part of the process is to trust the experts that are there. But what I would say is that that does not mean they can do everything. So your own marketing, your own branding, reaching out to your own launch team, these are all things they cannot do. So if you become a good partner with them, that's a lot better than constantly, you know, being in an antagonistic relationship with them. So that's really what she's saying, is that, you know, don't completely second-guess everything they're doing.
Figure
I don't
out
think
the partnership and make it work together is really
exactly.
a smart thing to do. Another tip, and I love this from Kristen Franz, who says, build a community. Books don't create movements. Movements create books.
Yeah, I love that.
I love that.
Yeah,
I think that that's one of the most profound things that I've ever heard. I mean, some books do create a movement, but that's one in 100 years, and you know, that's not what we're talking about. So building your community, let's talk about that, because your community does not have to be only your editor and your cover designer and your publisher and your family and your friends on Facebook. Your community,
well, in the beginning, it might
be. Pardon me?
I said in the beginning, it might be.
Well, in the beginning, and that may well be. But let's say that you take that small group that you have, and you expand those to build your community up. Let's talk about ways to do that, because I think that is really important. There are a lot of what I consider lone wolf, not because they're off doing something spectacular, but they feel isolated. Authors who are writing who are like, you know, nobody else promotes me. I really don't know anybody else to promote, and, you know, that type of thing. To me, that's part of the building the community theme. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I think it's not an easy thing for people, you know, and I get that, especially for authors. You know, a lot of authors tend to be sort of private and don't really want to be marketers. I mean, that's really why I wrote this book, and it's 150 pages, because the people I wrote it for don't want to read a 300-page book on marketing. They don't like it that much. You know, they just want the simple information that they can execute. You know, I've seen marketing books where they go on about case studies from Coca-Cola or, you know, some big brand, and your eyes glaze over because it's just so not relevant. And, you know, I love marketing, so when I read something like that, I'm all about it and I'm excited and I'm reading. But most of my authors have little or no interest in marketing. So they know they have to do it, and that's sort of what I try to do, is make it easy for them to do it. But it's not something that's, you know, that's easy for them. So what I think, you know, there are different ways to do it, and it takes time. You know, community is not built overnight. So to have this idea that, you know, the day you decide you want to market your book and have a community, the community is just going to show up. It's just going to lead you to disappointment. So a lot of times I feel like authors have this artificially created timeline, you know. Like sometimes my clients will call me and go, I've been tweeting for 3 days, but I don't see my Amazon ranking changed, you know. So, you know, they have this unrealistic expectation that, you know, just because they finally showed up, you know, that everybody's paying attention. So it just takes a little bit of time, a little bit of patience, a little bit of experimentation, you know, seeing what works and what doesn't work. Absolutely. And then I think the mailing list is a very important aspect, because that's sort of really people who have committed to your work in a way that other people have not. And I think you do have to do, you know, whether it's short stories if you're a fiction writer, or blogs if you're a nonfiction, or, you know, blogs if you're a novelist, you do have to sort of get rope people in, you know, get their attention, you know, get their interests. Because you can't, and, you know, it's not going to happen overnight. So that's sort of it's the small building blocks. But I would say that, you know, the things out.
It does take a village. It does take a village, in other words.
It takes a village.
It really does. And it could be a very small village to start, but then, you know, like one stone tossed into the river causes ripples that grow out and out and out. So you got to take the step someplace. You also talk about priority lists.
Yes. Yeah, I wanted to ask you, if you'll indulge me, I tell my clients this little story about building their community, and it may sound silly, but it really works. So I tell them, you know what it's like when you have a newborn? And some of them do, because they have children, and some of them don't, but they've heard enough stories. And I tell them that the first about 2 months, it's all one way. You know, the baby just needs changing. It gets up every 2 hours. You're feeding it. You're changing it. You're feeding it. You're changing it. It's crying. And it's a lot of one-way traffic. You know, you're taking care of the baby. And then there comes a point around 2 months, they turn around and they smile at you. And at that moment, you don't care what it took, how much work it is, what happens. And honestly, building, it's going to sound crazy, but I think building a brand is kind of like that. For a while, it feels like nobody's listening. You know, my clients will tell me my mom is the only one who reads my blog. And for a while, it's like that. You just feel like nobody's, but people are looking. They're just not interacting. And then one day, you're out somewhere.
They will.
And someone says to you, hey, I checked out your blog. It was really touching. And you go, oh, my God, like, somebody's listening. And I have clients who actually tweet me sometimes and say, okay, the baby finally smiled, you know, and I know what you're talking about. They know what you're talking about. So thank you for indulging me, but I just wanted to say there is a moment
for everyone.
It's a great story.
It's a great analogy, though. It really is, because when you think, oh, my God, I'm walking uphill all by myself, and all of a sudden someone comes along and says, hop on the back, you know, I'll give you a ride for the next couple of whatever it is.
It does really. People are noticing it, just consistency. That's important.
And you know, I think one of the things that you say that is not said often enough is have fun. For crying out loud, you chose this profession. You're doing something supposedly that you love. You're writing. You're creating. Have fun. I mean, make it fun. If you're in this angst all the time and you're saying, oh, my God, I still got 25,000 words to write. How am I ever going to do it? You know, it's okay as a joke once in a very blue moon, but for the most part, the process may be difficult, and you may say, I have the end party every time, and maybe that's what you need to do, is work to having a the end party for the end of your book. But you should be having fun. This is a good thing. This is a creative thing. You're doing something that most people in their lives wouldn't know how to even start, me included. And I speak, I've done over 1,000 author interviews. I don't know how to write a book. You never know how to write a book. I want to talk about chapter 6, because you talk a lot here about the priority list. And priority lists, I'm a big list maker myself. I make lists of what I'm going to talk about on my social media, what my lineup is for the week, what the things I want to discuss, authors I want to talk to, you know, things like that. I'm really big time on, you know, about making lists. It's real important for me. So this really, you know, appeals to the nerd in me a lot. The first thing you said is website. That was the most important. I see authors who put together their own websites, and you would never know that a professional has not done them. And yet I've seen authors who put together their own websites, and you say, oh, my God, I feel like I'm driving in Boston for the first time during rush hour, during a snowstorm. They're the most horrible things. So
yes.
I'm just kind of, I have to say, I could never create a website. I have someone who is redoing ours right now, thank God. And we have to redo it every year because we've grown so much. If someone asked me how to create a website, I'd look at them like they were speaking Sanskrit. I just would not have any idea what to say. So if you don't know how to do it, please don't do it. Really, don't. And I think Fozzie will tell you the same thing, that studies have shown that readers or followers of authors don't want every single bell and whistle that you can add on to your website. If it's moving, if it's making noise, if it's clanging and taking their attention away from your product, it would be like being in, Home Depot today. You go in to buy a flower for your garden, and there's all the Christmas lights and the moving things on display. It takes away from buying the flower. You want people to look at your page, know what your books are, and know where to go buy them. I can't say that more. I can't tell you how many surveys I've read from people who say, I don't want all that stuff. I can't stop the music. It won't shut off. What do you think, Fozzie?
Well, I could not agree with you more. I mean, I think what we have to remember is that, you know, there was a study done, I think, by Princeton University that said that people make first impressions are made within 1/10 of a second. And that's in person, but honestly, online, it's maybe even faster because we scroll a lot and we get through things. And a professional website, you know, indicates to people that you are a professional, you take your writing seriously, that, you know, you are presenting your best foot forward. And so I think when you have a website where the person, you know, decided they wanted to create their own website, which is fine, you know, if you know how to use the tools, that's totally okay. But be very mindful and have a group of people who will honestly tell you, you know, buddy, this was a nice experiment for your gardening club, but I wouldn't do it for your professional website for your, you know, your work as an author. So I think it's, you know, you just need people who can be honest with you. That's the most important thing. And I do think that, you know, that is the hub of all of your activity. So if your website is really dated and doesn't have good information or is overloaded with bells and whistles, you know, more and more people are now getting their information on mobile. So the more difficult it is that to load your site, you know, you've loaded it with so much stuff that people can't even load it on their phone, you're missing that opportunity. I mean, really, sometimes for some websites, it's over 60% that the traffic is coming from mobile devices and iPads. So it's really important that you kind of have a mobile-friendly site. The other thing that I think is a really important and a newer trend is that, you know, for a long time we used to build websites that were very specific to a particular genre of the author. So if they wrote, you know, mysteries, then it looked like mystery site. And, you know, if they wrote, let's say, romance, it looked very romance-y.
Right.
problem with that now is that authors are switching series. So they're writing
crossing
in different
genres.
They're crossing genres. Yes. There's experimentation going on. You know, there are authors who have or traditionally published, and they're experimenting with something that they couldn't sell to an agent and a publisher, but now they've been sitting on this novel for a long time and they want to sell it, and they want to do it themselves. So they're, you know, self-publishing it. I think all that excitement and experimentation is really fantastic, but you need a website that shows you as a professional author and doesn't tie you so closely to one genre or another. So that's another thing that I would really tell authors, you know, that it's better to use clean lines, you know, make sure that when something loads on the phone, it looks good, it's easy to read, the buttons are easy to get to. You know, all of them don't have huge graphics because it's hard to load them. So those kinds of things, I think, are really important. But your website is central to your marketing success, for sure.
I think it is, too. I agree with you. And I also will say, from someone who wears, like, three different levels of glasses, if you're doing white print on a black background, it's really hard for some of us to read that. So be kind to those of us who have, you know, our accessibility to sites is limited by what your site looks like. If your site is very dark, please be aware that there are people who may not be able to recognize what it is you're trying to say. We may not see images as well. Now, I have actually three different sets of glasses, so I can see when I'm going on a website. But it's a heck of a thing to think that there are people, you're missing out on people not seeing your beautiful website because you've chosen it to be so difficult for those who may have a little bit of a visual impairment. You don't need to make your fonts real small. It doesn't mean you have to overwhelm everyone with text, but give us enough information. I want to know about you, which leads me to the biggest beef I have when I line up guests. And you mentioned this as one of the final things in this chapter, and that is an Amazon author page.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot tell you how many times people write to me and say, I'm publishing my first book, and I'd like to be considered as a guest on your show. The first thing I do, is go to the Amazon author page, and if I see nothing there, I think, okay, well, I know nothing about this person. He doesn't care enough to tell me and readers about himself. Where does that lead me? I even have publicists who send me their authors, and I say, where's their Amazon author page? And they say, I know, can you believe? They haven't created it. To me, that's a big, big no-no. Even as a reader, And my listeners know this. I say this all the time. I read 400 books a year. I do not own a television. I don't watch Netflix or Amazon Prime. I like to read. I want to read what my guests are writing. I want to read what debut novelists are writing. If I can't find anything else about you, if I can't find out about you, why would I invite you on my show? So...
Yeah,
what's
I think it is. I mean,
of all places, if you can't afford to do a Wix website or a WordPress site, why aren't you putting your Amazon author page up with the links that are? I mean, it just seems so obvious to me. Fosia, tell me what's wrong, why people don't do that, and why they don't keep it updated.
You know, I think it's very simple. It just falls off their priority list. You know, it's not important, so it doesn't get done. But I think what you bring up is really important, which is that some of these things are just common courtesy. You know, you don't want people to have to hunt down information about you. So, you know, have a LinkedIn page. Make sure your author, wherever people will have an opportunity to gain more information about yourself, make sure those things are covered. It's almost like a courtesy to your reader. You know, don't make them hunt things down. I have one client, and when he came to me, you're right, he didn't have his author page done. And I said, you know, you have a very common name. So when we put in your name, other authors come up. I don't even know if this is your book. Did you write this also? Or are you doing cross-genre thing? You're making me do too much work. You know, you've got to make things easier for me.
It's true.
And I think that's what it is. It's a little bit of a courtesy.
I have a delightful author friend who just wrote a fabulous debut novel. And on his Amazon author page, he started it by saying, he wrote it in third person, so he used Mr. and then his last name, and talked about, first of all, his parents, how long they had been married and created this wonderful childhood and this upbringing and all, and then all every incarnation and every level of his life. And I went, oh, my God, I don't want to read your autobiography on your Amazon author page. So there's the other side of the coin. You know what I love? I love going to an Amazon author page, and an author said, hi, thanks for stopping by my page. Let me tell you a little bit about me. This is what I have done. These are the authors that motivate me and inspire me. And these are what my books are about. If you want to find out more about me, here's my website, or send me a tweet, or even email me, and I'll be glad to answer you back. That gives me a thrill. Instead of filling up paragraphs and paragraphs of nonsense that really goes in an autobiography.
Yeah, I think actually that brings up a good point about reviews as well. You know, people posting these like 3-paragraph long endorsements or reviews, nobody's reading that. It's not going to happen.
No.
So pick the line and a half you really want me to read and just put that.
Yeah, I interview rather than review, even though I obviously read a lot more than I interview. I will review and I will say, I won't tell the story, I'll just talk about the writer's style, and I don't write troll reviews. It's either a 4 or 5-star review or else I'm not putting anything.
Mm-hmm.
So when I go
okay.
on Amazon or any other site, I just say, I think the writer captured this, or I like
mm-hmm.
this particular character or the dialogue or so on. Because I guess I'm so used to listening to authors talk to me about their process and those
mm-hmm.
things, it really becomes very important to me. So, but we're not saying don't review. Please, the best and the nicest and the kindest and the biggest gift you can give to an author whose book you enjoyed is to go and say thank you by writing just 2 sentences and giving a starred review. If you don't like a book, do not assume that you are an editor and can tell someone what was wrong with their book. And please, please, whatever you do, don't write hateful stuff. You are not, we call that a trolling.
Yes.
And you're not like, you'll be bullied out of the review system pretty fast. Hey, it wasn't my cup of tea is all you have to write. Because
mm-hmm.
what appeals
or just
to
don't
me
say
may
anything.
Not appeal to you.
Don't say anything. You know, I mean, everybody works so hard on their books that, you know, and since we know a lot of writers and our authors, you know, your heart goes out to them. One of my wonderful, wonderful authors wrote a book, a really wonderful book about human trafficking. You know, it was a novel, and she's really close to the problem. She wanted to bring it to light. She wrote this incredibly powerful and beautiful novel. And someone on Goodreads gave her a 1-star and said, that's a terrible subject. I would never read a book on that subject. And, you know, that's just,
except
it's
that they obviously bought the book and read it. Right.
No. They didn't buy the book. They had no intention of buying the book. They just didn't like the idea of the book, the fact that it was about human trafficking. Well, none of us like human trafficking. You know, nobody's signing up to say human trafficking is good. So, you know, when just be kind to the fact that someone's looking at that and feeling very unfair. One time, one of my authors, Amazon was having some issues with shipping. And their books just got out later than expected, nothing to do with the author. And people gave the book 1-star because they didn't get the book in time.
But
these are things that are so unfair.
That's the nature of the beast, though. That's the nature of the beast. If food is bad in a restaurant, the waiter or the waitress gets a small tip. Even if the service was good, the food was bad. Rather than complaining to the chef, the server takes the slack for that. And so I think that authors have to grow a little tiny bit of a thick skin. Now, whenever an author tells me, oh, my God, I got a 1-star review, and I say, congratulations, you popped your 1-star cherry. God, it's over and done with, you know. Okay, now
right,
we're ready
I'm gonna
for
have
anything.
To, I am stealing
you
that, Pam. I
that.
Am stealing that from you.
Both of you, please do, because, you know, the sooner it happens, the better off the offer is. I just
so
say,
true.
Oh, thank God you've got that out of the way. Let's have a party. All right, we're doing a Facebook event.
I know, we definitely need cake.
Yes, because, you know, I know authors can be very sensitive about that.
Yeah.
And the thing is, remember that everybody has their opinion, and you know what they say about opinions, but if you see in reviews, if reviews are saying this character's actions belie what you've done as far as the character description, and you're seeing that same thing over and over and over again, that's the time when you have to pay attention to a review, is
mm-hmm.
when someone is noticing the same thing over and over again. But for the most part, you're looking at listen, it's a game with Amazon. It's moving the algorithm. So,
Fozia really
talks also about having a very strong mailing list. I say it over and over, the biggest tool in your writer's toolbox, the most important thing you can have,
a list of people who are dedicated to helping spread the word about your books. And how do you do that? On release day, 100, minimum 100 reviews on review day. First release on release day, you need 100 reviews. That way you're going to move the algorithm, and you can't do that unless you create a strong newsletter and a following and a mailing list, and your readers understand what you want. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's, a 100 reviews seems so daunting to most people, and I think you can say that if you don't do it at release, doesn't mean it's the end of the world. You just have to kind of move towards that goal and keep getting
that
good reviews.
That has to be your goal.
Keep getting
exactly.
Good, but it does have to be a goal.
Exactly.
And but I think
now
I'm
sorry. Go ahead.
No. I was just going to say the reason it's so important is because, you know, the open rates and the click-through rates on authors' mailing lists, because I see so many of them, is between, sometimes 60 to 70%. That's unheard of in any other kind of marketing. You know, you have a very dedicated audience at that moment, and if you don't treat them as such, you really miss that opportunity. So it's really important that you have a very, you just have that goal to build your mailing list. Always think about building your mailing list. That is in my priority list, it's the second thing. It's more important than social media.
I agree with you, and I agree that a mailing list doesn't have to be pages long. It doesn't even have to fit an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper. What you should say should be relevant, trending, and important to your reader. I say those words over and over again, and I'm sure you do too, because I think they're true. If you're not saying something relevant or trending or important to your reader, then your reader has no reason to follow along. If you make it clear that your readers will get your advanced reader copy 2 weeks before the book release and that your expectation is for everyone to post on release day, and you have built up enough goodwill by doing Skype conferences and Facebook special events with your special reader group and your mailing list people, if you've done the work ahead of time, it can happen. But it takes, like you said, you have to wait for the baby to smile. And then you say, I've got my first 25 readers. And they're going to go ahead, and I know they're going to review on the first day. They're going to review on release day.
Right.
And they're going to
send
the word out, and they're going to tell their friends about my books.
Yeah,
I actually tell
my authors that there's two types of lists that you should maintain. One is what I call the launch team. So that's the, as you said, the first 500 people, or not 500, but 25 people or 100 people. And these are people, who you talk to regularly, who would buy your book and who would want to support
you.
It's not strangers. You know, these are people you already know and have a relationship with and hopefully a good favor bank with. And then there's a second list, which is readers. And you do need to have both of those. You need to have one that you can leverage for something, and then the others that you're just courting. You know, you're just kind of wooing them.
Exactly.
So I think Mark Dawson
talks about this a lot. He talks about having 700, launch readers.
Mm-hmm.
And so first release day, he's got 500 reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And if the readers miss more than two launches, they're off the list because they know that's what they're there for. And then he's got his newsletter people, and newsletter people are your kind of unpaid publicity and marketing team for their friends, for their book clubs, for their libraries, for places like that. And you don't have to always give stuff away. It isn't about, if I kept all the stuff I was sent, I'd have to have another bedroom in my house, okay? I don't need your stuff. What I want to do is I want to read your books. Occasionally you want to have a contest? Yeah, I'll go ahead and I'll play. But, I want to know what's happening with you. I want to know a little bit about the books that you're writing. I want to know what's coming up. I want to know what you're reading. What I'm saying? It's a more of a social thing versus
a promotional
thing. The release group.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So now I have a
big question, and it's one that's very perplexing for me because I saw this in an email that came to me on one of my alternate emails, not through my Authors on the Air email. And it said, would you like to join my fan club versus my readers club? And I, you know, I'm so careful about words, and sometimes I say the wrong ones, and I quickly apologize if I say the wrong ones. But it hit me wrong because to me, fans are like for NXS and those boy bands and Miley Cyrus and all that, you know. Or like I'm a huge fan of Sam Elliott. Anybody who reads my profile page knows that. And I'm sorry I haven't posted lately. I will, I promise, a Sam Elliott picture. Versus readers. So what's your take on that?
Well, my feeling is, you can't ask someone to be your fan. It has to be a much more organic process, you know. We become fans of people. People can't say, be my fan. I think it's just the words do matter, and I think it's kind of almost insulting to suggest that you know whose fan I should be. I mean, I think it's, it just seems silly to me. I mean, you can ask me to be a reader, and that's a, you know, that's a less emotional request. I think fandom is a very emotional thing. I mean, we all know, you know, the Beatles fans when they arrived in the U.S.
Sure.
You know, that scene is the ultimate scene in all of our minds of what fans are.
Exactly.
And,
fandom,
you know, the Beatles didn't say, be my fan. You know, they did good work, and people became their fans. And I think that's really all you can do is do good work and hope that people will become fans of your good work. But you can't demand fandom, I don't think. You can't ask for it.
It was really interesting to me because I try to read as many posts as I can every day. So when I hear followers or fans versus readers and friends, it's not something that's going to make me stay up at night, but it does, as someone who tries very hard to be cautious with words, I don't want to have any
off
feelings, and if I ever have, I'm sorry. Please, you hear it from me right now, and I'll say it over and over again. But it feels uncomfortable.
It's a turn off. Yeah, it's a turn off.
Yeah.
You know, it just feels icky. Same thing happens when people sign me up for their newsletter without my permission. You know, not keeping me up at night, but it's icky. You know, I didn't ask for it.
If
you asked my permission, I would have probably been okay with it. But without asking my permission, you're sort of like, you know, you're demanding that I pay attention to you. And I don't think we can do that anymore.
I get that a lot, too. When a lot of times when someone writes in and they write to info@authorsontheair.com, which is, you know, how people get in touch with us. And then if I respond to something and they automatically sign me up for a newsletter, or they sign me up for an email blast with no way to unsubscribe, or put me in a group. Put me in a group on Facebook. I want to just say, oh, God, do you even know what you're doing? How horrible this is? I try hard to be fair to everyone, Posia, but you know, it's hard.
Well, the thing is, the reason they do that, you know, a lot of times people really, the reason they do that is because they're chasing numbers and not relationships.
Yes.
You know, if they were chasing relationships, I would rather have 300 people on my mailing list that actually want to hear from me than 30,000 that
3,000.
I grabbed from elsewhere or bought a list or, installed in my mailing list without their permission, because I know they're all either deleting it or not paying attention. So it's more important to focus on engagement and not on numbers. You know, numbers are irrelevant these days. It's so much about engagement.
They really are. We've passed the 1 hour mark, which is something I never do anymore. But I could talk to you for hours. So my first request is, will you come back soon?
Course.
I mean, within the next couple of weeks, come back and let's finish going through your book.
Okay.
Will you do that?
Deal. Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
Wonderful.
Yeah,
okay.
I'd love to
and
do that.
The next thing I want to know is, if you could say one thing to someone who is starting out, what is the one piece of advice you think really needs to go with that author everywhere now?
That whatever marketing they start, to stay consistent with it. A lot of authors are always in this launch phase. You know, when they're launching
right.
something, they're all out there and they're posting and they're aggressive and they're, you know, my book, my book, my book. And then the book comes and then they drop everything.
You don't
no
hear
communication,
from them.
No response,
right.
no nothing. Then the next book comes
right.
and then they're like, here's my book, here's my book, here's my book. So that really doesn't work. You need to have a consistent engagement regardless of whether your book is coming or not. So if you think you're going to tweet 4 times a day, 5 times a day, 2 times a day, do that no matter what the strategy, you know, no matter where you are in your publication cycle. Do not disappear and then do not come arrive with like 10 tweets a day just because your book is launching. You know, that's just not very smart. So whatever
it sounds like a booty call,
make,
a booty call for books. You don't want to do a booty call for books. You know, this has to be a long-lasting friendship, not a booty call
yes.
for books. Okay.
There you go. I like the way you think. That's exactly right.
You know,
so I think
remember, Fuzzy, I told you at the beginning, you could be NPR, I could be the funny farm, and see, that's the way it is. You're the classy one. I'm just the sassy one. What can I say?
No, I think I just gave you the baby metaphor. So I think, you know.
I love that. I love the
baby
analogy. Metaphor.
Yeah, I don't think either one of us
yeah.
is doing NPR. But, you know, I just think that authors just need to remember that they can't always be in launch strategy, you know, launch phase, and that they need to have
right.
consistent engagement. You know, don't send a newsletter only when you have a book out. Don't show up on social media only when that. So that's one. And if you wouldn't
right.
mind and indulge me, I'm going to give a second advice. The second
Please
one
do.
Is that, you know, authors often hire people to do their social media for them, and I get that, and I know you're busy, and I know you don't want to do it, and I get that. I understand the impulse. Here's what I will tell you, though. First of all, it's not consistent, because at some point you're going to sit back and go, how much did I spend on that, and did I sell enough books to make up for that? And you won't, because it's not a sales channel. The second thing is that they can talk for you, maybe, but nobody's listening for you. So if you're not on social media actually listening as much as you're talking, you're missing out. You're not learning anything about your readers. You're not learning anything about what other
exactly.
people are doing. So just
exactly.
those two things, I think, just keep that in mind.
Yeah, and one of the things I've found is that in too many of those type of services go out and are spread among direct mail list and, you know, oh, I have 10,000 followers. I'll go ahead and sign up and, you know, my 10,000 followers are following along. And we're finding out that a lot of these things are falsified. It's better to know your team, the people who are working with you, and that you have a line of communication.
Yes.
I want to say to authors that remember that this is your small business. No matter how successful you are, this is your small business. This is your business. Treat it as gently and as kindly as you would treat someone who walked into a business to meet you personally. Make sure your product, which is your book, exquisitely edited and perfectly written and absolutely right on the money formatted. Make sure your cover is designed so beautifully, and that is the best that it can possibly be, that the tools for your marketing are beautiful, and that you welcome people into your store to buy your book. Because let's face it, I can go right now to Barnes & Noble and buy Fozzia's book easily, or I can, you know, kind of go through the stacks over at Costco or BJ's looking for a social media book and not find what I really need. I want you to be, you know, the Barneys and the Nordstrom with your product. I don't want it to be in Kmart and in all those places. Do the best you possibly can and remember that it is a business. So when people interact with you, be nice to them. Don't, you know, be nice. You never know who is going to say, gosh, I really like talking to that lady. I think I'm going to go buy her book.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Exactly. Absolutely. It's all relationships. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And that's
it's
why
building
it's
your community.
Yes, it is. Yep.
So,
and just like in real life, it takes time.
Burke, I love you. I just think
you're
magnificent.
Oh, you are awesome, Pam. Thank you.
Thank you, darling. And you're going to send me offers, and then I'm gonna talk to you probably tomorrow or Monday when you're back in your office. And you're going to come back in a couple weeks, and we're going to get through the second half of your book. And anybody listening, have your questions ready. This is the expert. She's going to talk to you like you are her baby, and you just smiled at her.
Happy to help in any way I can. But this was so
you
fun,
are delightful.
And I'm so glad. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for
Thank
this
you.
Opportunity.
Thank you.
I
you know, this
it.
Is like kind of another component of our relationship here. You always send me the most delightful authors, and now I've had a chance to interview you, and you know, we get started all over again. I want to remind everyone, October is a very special month. I'm inviting authors who's never been on the show to come on down. Let's get on the show. I'm back full-time from my medical leave. I have my left hip is doing great. I am now bionic on both sides. I've got plenty of spaces open. My first interview in October with Alex Dolan, who has a fabulous her second book, The Empress of Tempera, and it's wonderful. I can't wait for you to hear. And I'm going to have Fosia come back and talk.
I will.
Have a
Happy
wonderful
to do
weekend,
that.
My darling friend.
Thank you.
And I can't wait to talk
thank
to you again.
You. And thank you for
thank
all
you,
your
darling.
Support for our authors. I really do appreciate it.
Always,
very much.
Always. Thank you.
Thank
and thank you for sending
care.
Me the best authors. And you and I will talk soon. Okay,
we will.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night. And thanks for listening and staying with me so long. Have a beautiful weekend. Go and read a good book and thank an author by writing a review. And thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.